27. That physical thing. Laney was at a black rubber urinal in the men's when he noticed the Russian combing his hair in the mirror. At least it looked like black rubber with sort of floppy edges. They obviously had the plumbing working, but he wondered what they'd say if you asked to make your own contribution to the grotto. On his way here, he'd noticed that one of the bars was topped with a slab of something murky green and translucent, lit from below, and he'd hoped they hadn't made that from what they'd sawn out of the stairwell. Dinner was over, and he'd probably had too much sake with it. He and Arlie and Yamazaki had watched Rez meeting this new version of the Eideru, the one Willie Jude saw as a big silver thermos. And Blackwell was having to get used to that, because Laney guessed that the bodyguard hadn't had any idea she'd be here, not until he'd walked in and Rez had told him. Arlie had talked with Lo through most of it, mainly about real estate, different properties he owned around the world. Laney had listened to more of Yamazaki's ideas about accessing this teenage fan club stuff, and there might actually be something to that, but they'd have to try it to find out. Blackwell hadn't said two words to anybody, drinking lager instead of sake, and packing his food away as though he were trying to plug something, some gap in security that could be taken care of if you stuffed it methodically with enough sashimi. The Australian was an ace with chopsticks. He could probably stick one in your eye at 50 paces. But the main show had been Rez and the Eideru, and to a lesser extent, Kuwayama, who'd carried on long conversations with them both. The other one, Ozaki, seemed to be the guy they brought along in case someone had to change the batteries in the silver thermos. And Willie Jude was amiable enough, but in about as content-free a way as possible. Texts were supposed to be an easy source of whatever passed for gossip in a given company, so Laney had tried a few openings in that direction, but Ozaki hadn't said any more than he'd had to. And since Laney couldn't get right away within his field of vision without starting to slide over into a nodal mode, he'd had to conduct his evening's eavesdropping with whatever pickup visuals were available. Arlie wasn't too bad for that. There was something about the line of her jaw that he particularly liked, and kept coming back to. Laney zipped up and went to wash his hands. The basin made of that same floppy-looking black stuff, and noticed that the Russian was still combing his hair. Laney had no way of knowing if the man was literally Russian or not, but he thought of him that way because of the black patent paratrooper boots with contrasting white stitching, the pants with the black silk ribbon down the side, and the white leather evening jacket. Either Russian, or one of those related jobs, but very definitely combinat inflected, that mutant, commie mafioso thing. The Russian was combing his hair with a total concentration that made Laney think of a fly grooming itself with its front feet. He was very large and had a large head, though it was mainly in the vertical, quite tall from the eyebrows up, seeming to taper very slightly toward the crown. For all the attention being given to the combing, the man didn't actually have much hair, not on top anyway, and Laney had thought these guys all went in for implants. Rydell had told him combinat types were all over Tokyo. Rydell had seen a documentary about it, how they were so singularly and surrealistically brutal that nobody wanted to mess with them. Then Rydell had started to tell him about two Russians, San Francisco cops of some kind, who he'd had some sort of run-in with. But Laney had to take a meeting with Rice Daniels and a makeup artist and never heard the end of it. Laney checked to see that he didn't have anything stuck in his teeth from dinner. As he went out, the Russian was still combing. He saw Yamazaki blinking and looking lost. "It's back there," he said.
"What is?"
"The can."
"Can?"
"Men's. The toilet."
"But I was looking for you."
"You found me."
"I observed as we ate that you avoided looking directly at the Eideru."
"Right."
"I surmised that density of information is sufficient to allow nodal apprehension."
"You got it." Yamazaki nodded.
"Ah. But this would not be the case with one of her videos, or even with a live performance."
"Why not?" Laney had started back in the direction of their table.
"Bandwidth," Yamazaki said. "The version here tonight is high bandwidth prototype."
"Are we compensated for beta testing?"
"Can you describe the nature of nodal apprehension, please?"
"Like memories," Laney said. "Or clips from a movie. But something the drummer said made me think I was just seeing her latest video." Someone shoved Laney out of the way from behind, and he fell across the nearest table, breaking a glass. He felt the glass shatter under him, and found himself staring straight down for a second into the taut gray latex lap of a woman who screamed explosively just before the table gave way. Something, probably her knee, clipped him hard in the side of the head. He managed to get to his knees, holding his head, and found himself recalling an experiment they'd done in science back in Gainesville. Surface tension. You sprinkled pepper over the water in a glass, brought the tip of a needle close to the film of pepper, watched it spring back from the needle like a live thing. And he saw that happening here, his head ringing. But instead of pepper, it was the crowd in the Western world, and he knew that the needle must be pointed at Rez's table. The back of a white leather evening jacket. But then he saw the Sherman tank come unmoored on the shoulders of the recoiling crowd, spinning toward him, huge and weightless, and the lights went out. The crowd had been screaming anyway, but the dark twisted the communal pitch up into something that had Laney covering his ears. Or trying to, because someone stumbled into him and he went over backward, instinctively curling into a tight fetal knot and clamping his hands across the back of his neck. "Hey," said a voice very close to his ear. "Get on up. You're gonna get stepped on." It was Willie Jude. "I can see." A hand around his wrist. "Got infrared." Laney let the drummer pull him to his feet. "What is it? What's happening?"
"Dunno, but come on. Gonna get worse."
As if on cue, a terrible squeal of raw animal pain cut through the frenzied crowd noise.
"Blackwell got one," Willie Jude said, and Laney felt the drummer's hand grip his belt.
He stumbled as he was pulled along. Someone ran into him, shouted in Japanese. After that, he kept his hands up, trying to protect his face, and went where the drummer pulled him. Suddenly, they were in a cove or pocket of relative quiet. "Where are we?" Laney asked.
"This way."
Something clipped Laney across the shins.
"Stool,"
Willie Jude said.
"Sorry."
Glass snapped beneath Laney's shoes. A curve of greenish light, broken cursive hanging in the dark. Another few steps, and he saw the grotto. Willie Jude let go of his belt.
"You can see here, right? That bioluminescent stuff?"
"Yeah," Laney said. "Thanks."
"It doesn't register on my glasses. I get infrared off warm bodies, but I can't make out the steps. Walk me down."
He took Laney's hand. They started down the stairs together. A black-clad trio of Japanese shot past them, leaving a high-heeled pump on the encrusted stairs, and vanished around the landing. Laney kicked the shoe out of Willie Jude's way and kept going. When they rounded the corner at the landing, Arlie was there, a green champagne bottle cocked over her shoulder. There was a smear of blood at the corner of her mouth, darker than her lipstick. When she saw Laney, she lowered the bottle. "Where were you?" she said.
"The men's," Laney said.
"You missed the show.
What happened?"
"Damn it," she said. "My coat's up there."
"Keep moving, keep moving," Willie Jude said.
More stairs, more landings, the rippling walls of the grotto giving way to concrete. People kept rushing down past them, knots and singles, taking the stairs too fast. Laney rubbed his ribs where he'd come down on the glass. It hurt, but somehow he hadn't been cut.
"They look like Combinat," Arlie said. "Big ugly guys, bad outfits. I couldn't tell if they were after Rez or the Eideru. Like they just thought they could walk in and do it."
"Do what?"
"Dunno,"
she said.
"Kuyama had at least a dozen of his own security people at the two closest tables. And Blackwell probably prays for a scene like that every night before he goes to bed. He reached into his jacket, then the lights went out."
"He put 'em out," Willie Jude said. "Some kind of remote. He can see better in the dark than I can with these infrareds. Dunno how that is, but he can."
"How'd you get out?"
Laney asked Arlie.
"Flashlight in my purse."
"Laney-san."
Looking back to see Yamazaki, one sleeve of his green plaid coat pulled free at the shoulder, his glasses missing a lens. Arlie had taken a phone from her purse and was cursing softly as she tried to get it to work. Yamazaki caught up with him at the next landing. The four of them continued down together, Laney still holding the blind drummer's hand. When they reached the street, the Western world's sullen crew of door people were nowhere in sight. A single policeman with a plastic rain cover on his cap was muttering frantically into a microphone clipped to the front of his rain cape.
He was walking in tight circles as he did this, gesturing dramatically with a white baton at nothing in particular. Several kinds of alien siren were converging on the Western world, and Lainey thought he could hear a helicopter. Willie Jude dropped Lainey's hand and adjusted his video goggles to the street's light level.
Where's my car?
Arlie lowered her phone, which apparently was working now. You'd better come with us, Willie. Some kind of tactical unit is on the way.
Nothing like it, Rez said,
and Lainey turned to see the singer emerging from the Western world, brushing something white from his dark jacket.
That physical thing. Too much time in the virtual, we forget that, don't we?
You're Lainer?
Extending his hand. Lainey, Lainey said, as Arlie's dark green van pulled up beside them.